Should I call it a reboot or a season two? There's no really seasons to teaching. A person that's a teacher is always a teacher. So we'll call it a reboot. Professional development is back. I can't wait to get things going. It's so different now since I've last been with you. Man, the last thing I posted was in July of 20. And I was talking with Stark. And man, we had some predictions and we were probably wrong. But I'm glad to be back. I've been teaching remotely all year long. There were a few weeks where they had us come in the building, but then things got worse. And so now we are back at home. I can go to the building if I want to, and I may. But now that we're at home, professional development is a little different. I can actually record this at home rather than in my car. But I like doing it in my car because it was so fresh. And I could do it with my phone. It was great. So scroll down a little bit and see if you can find some interesting ones from my phone. But I am rebooting. We're coming back, hopefully stronger than ever, since I have everything I need here to upload immediately. All right, some updates. Been teaching remotely forever. I'm going to talk about that today. And I really need to salute any teacher that's in a room teaching right now. My wife is one of them. Wearing a mask, cleaning things, dealing with all that. I cannot believe that this has happened to our society. And I can't believe that in some cases people are in schools and in other cases they're not. And how different all that is throughout the country, even in my state of Massachusetts. So I salute anybody who's driving maybe right now listening to a classroom that they need to clean and wear a mask all day. I understand my position teaching remotely and how quote unquote easy that is, or maybe not. Some people think it's difficult. That I can talk about later as well. But it's stressful, right? More or less, it has an extra amount of stress. Keep the kids apart. Don't touch that. Stop licking me. No, just kidding. Do not fart in your friend's face. None of that happens anymore, right? It is so stressful, most likely. So salute to anybody driving to a classroom today or tomorrow or the next and so on and so forth. Any condolences out to any teachers who may have gotten COVID or know somebody? It has been a wild ride in the education field the last several months. It's definitely been a wild ride for me. It's been in and out, in and out. We're going back to school and like literally like a few days before, okay, we're not going back. I'm in a Title I community and those tend to be the kind of communities where school becomes a super spreader rather than the other way around. And but when we have high immigrant rates and low poverty rates, that's usually the case. But if you go to more urban or better yet, suburban school districts, you're going to see that school becomes the safe place to be. So I am just glad, and I think I said this with Stark, I'm just glad I'm not making these decisions because people's jobs on the line, money on the line. But let me transition into jobs on the line, money's on the line. You know who's out of a job as of last month? That would be Betsy DeVos. Are you here? Present? No? Oh, you're absent. Okay, good. I'm pretty glad, as most teachers probably are, that there is a Secretary of Education that actually served as a teacher at one point. I don't even know his name, and I don't have to. All I need to know is that he's been a teacher and a principal, and he's been nominated by a person that can say complete sentences and has a law degree. And who's sacrificed so much in his own family and is now the president. So I trust his competence. Therefore, I trust our new Secretary of Education's competence. So I'm looking forward to being able to move forward in education with confidence, and I hope anybody who's a teacher listening would be confident in that too. Now, let's move on to reflections on teaching remotely. I am both. People ask me how it's going. Hey, how's the job going? How's teaching? And I say, I'm joyfully bored. Now, what my district has done, and let me say, and I'll say this probably at the top of every podcast from now on, is my views don't reflect the views of my district, although I would never say anything bad about my district because I usually don't disagree with anything my district does. I absolutely love my bosses and my admin, but my district started off when it came to remote was they wanted the kids to have their cameras on. Now, I was against that at first. I was like, man, that's tough. You don't know. What if this? What if that? But now, after teaching for a few months with cameras off, because we relapsed on that, or we didn't really relapse, it was just kind of a discussion, and we landed on, you know, cameras should be on for attendance. You know, they should have to at least speak up for attendance. I can tell you, extrovert confirmed. I always thought because I was somewhat of an intellectual that made me somewhat of an introvert, but no. Talking to Google avatars for months on end is taking a toll on my psyche. And you know, I'm the dad joke history teacher joker, and not getting those laughs really means something, you know? And so when I do get them, it's great. The kids actually, sometimes the kid even goes out of their way to press their talk button to laugh at my joke, and that's really great. What all of this has really made me focus on, and something you could think about, is the word presence in education. Can one learn without presence? Because we've only had presence in education, and now there's a possibility where one could supposedly be educated, but not necessarily be present. So I've got kids I've never laid eyes on that I'm giving A's to. I don't know what that says about my teaching. I don't know what that says about their learning, but I just find that interesting. I've got kids that I've never laid eyes on that I'm giving F's to. So is my pedagogy changing at all? Not much. I'm very, the kids do most of the work. I'm not a PowerPoint slider kind of guy. We do a lot of, primary and secondary resources stuff. And it's tough because I was telling one of my principals this, for the last several years, everything has been me coaching or guiding specific thinking and work that the kids are already doing. So when they get into the building, when I say I give them work, I hate saying that, but I give them work, and people used to think, oh, it's fill in the blank or worksheets. No. They're reading things that I'm teaching them how to take notes on things. I'm teaching him scaffolded and strategic thinking, but I'm not there to walk over to them into their presence. I'm not there to be present with them to really guide them. It's really weird. And I've been saying this to a lot of my colleagues. How many of these kids that are getting F's would be getting C's, maybe even B's, if they were in the building? You know, I think that matters. I think that's okay that's a thing because they're kids. This could definitely work for college or grad school, but this isn't working for ninth graders. And I'm wondering how the upperclassmen are doing as well. My two kids are doing okay because they're, not because, but they seem to be doing a little better with that presence learning. They have their Zoom meetings, right, when they're at home. But at the same time, they're not connecting with their teacher in a way that helps learning become more of a coaching and guiding thing or a mentoring thing. So it's tough. There's no side conversations with me being able to connect with maybe a teenage boy or video games or sports. There's no side conversations of me talking to one of the girls. I like to make fun of the boys. or there's none of that. There's no staying after class real quick. None of that. It's really tough. And it's hard to build trust between me and my students. And it's hard for them to buy in when the leader that they're following, that there's no presence, and with no presence, there's no relationship. I would argue the same. It wouldn't be so bad if we had all cameras on all the time, but coming from the district and the community that my kids are in, you don't want their cameras on all the time. They don't want their cameras on all the time. There's stuff going on in the background. during the day in their houses. They've told me that. They've took surveys on that. So it's just, it's unprecedented what is going on right now, at least in my little bubble of education. I know it probably is for yours as well. Unprecedented. So what ends up happening is, I think my kids, because we did asynchronous work. What that is they don't have to do it right then. You leave work for them and they do it at their leisure or pleasure, as it were. That's asynchronous. We did that last spring. So I was able to live stream some things. There was absolutely no presence with asynchronous work. But I was able to do, I was able to lead learning in a kind of a different way, in that I was able to talk from, you know, to, at least I knew that I was being viewed, as if that, does that make sense? I knew that somebody was watching because I could see the numbers when I did live stream things. Now we're attempting synchronous work. So the kids get on, I teach them a little bit about what we're about to learn. I show them how to do the activity, the learning experience, I like to call it. And then they're off on their own. That's synchronous, and I hope they do it. And I mean, just today, somebody kid had his microphone on accident. What's in the background? Call of Duty. So it's just like, I mean, with a camera off, they might as well be standing out in the hallway. That's how I think of it. And I think they keep turning stuff in really late. I'll be grading stuff on Google Classroom, and suddenly, like that night, I get like 10 assignments from my kid. It's like, I'm not grading that. You're supposed to do it that day. But I feel bad with synchronous learning. Who knows what's going on in their house at 10 a.m. in the morning? You know, do I really expect them to have the discipline and the cerebral fortitude to put all that together into an activity and into a task that they have to do in their house? The Xbox or PlayStation is right there. Or the TV is right there, you know, or their phone is right there. There's no outside discipline on them. It's tough. And the kids that do succeed are the ones that have the explicit, or not the implicit, but the explicit, the outside discipline that keeps them in line and in check. So all that to say, synchronous, asynchronous, we're still trying to figure this out. They want to be treated like it's asynchronous, and I'm getting told it's from synchronous. Don't know, but I'm doing my best to grade everything I can get my hands on. And our admin has been so supportive when it comes to parents and even supporting the kids and getting better grades. It is just uncharted territory. I can't say that enough. Now, my big soapbox right now is what I'm calling contextual equality. Kids in America during COVID do not have what I call contextual equality. That is something we've already tried to do, and some schools do it more than others, i.e. uniforms. They want the context of the learning to be more equal. I didn't say equity, equal, equality, the same, conformity, right? It's in uniforms. On a lower level, it's behavior codes. And on the base level, it's a location and a building. That is the contextual equality that is the basis of all schools in general. But with COVID, that is out the window. Let me tell you, the best kind of contextual equality we have now is the computer and the time slots of learning. Other than that, contextual equality does not exist because there's no building, there's no location, there's no presence. And so if we, to do our best, we have to be as understanding as we can. And I'm sitting here thinking through this right now, just learning and trying to figure out how I can do better as well. But tough stuff. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how the hybrid situation is going in some places. There's a couple hybrid districts up here in my state. I'm sure they're all around the country. If my thinking runs true in that presence and contextual equality matters, wouldn't it be true to say that the kids in hybrid, the ones that are in the building, have better learning outcomes? That would be my hypothesis, right? And I think that when you first think about it, that's a given, but why is it a given, you know? I also think there's probably some outliers too, right? I have a bunch of kids who are just knocking stuff out the park who may be super distracted in the building, who may be just like off the walls with their peers in the building, you know, in each classroom, and who may be caught up with drama or something like that. but who are succeeding now because they can set aside that time because they're a little bit more mature. So I'm interested to see how the hybrid kids, how those learning outcomes come around. So thanks for jumping on the soapbox with me on that one. Every episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about some theory and stuff like that, and I'll fill you in on some content that I'm doing, if not just for my sake, so I can hear myself say whatever I'm doing. We just finished the Aztecs. I love the Aztecs because they're so weird and scary. And I think that's what I got across my students. They're also very complicated, progressive, and accomplished people. And I hope I got that across to them. And once I loop back to the conquests and, you know, the Europeans taking over North America, hopefully they take that with them and use that as a layer of what's going on with that. So I'm excited to do that. I'm doing Ahsoka next. If you haven't seen the Shegg Ahsoka, check that out. It's a really cool, it's one of my most popular mini cues that I do. And it's a niche part of Indian history, but it's an important part and helps kids understand and put things into context when it comes to, I mean, mass murder and death and religion. So I'll update you on that as it goes. And then for the rest of the year, I'll be settling in Europe for a while and hopefully get them set up for U.S. history. We'll see. Massachusetts got us doing all of world history in 1 year. Whatever. latest history book. I really recommend the latest John Brown book.
What's it called? John Brown, Abolitionist. Hold on, off the shelf.
John Brown, Abolitionist, the man who killed slavery, sparked the Civil War, and ceded civil rights. David S. Reynolds gives a really good chronological account of John Brown's life, but peppers in and at towards the end really puts him in context of the transcendentalist movement. He doesn't outright call John Brown a transcendentalist, but he links them pretty well, and both with, you know, records of him hanging out with them and asking them for money, but as well as thought processes. I used to think Jonathan Edwards was the last great Puritan. It is John Brown, the last great Puritan for sure. And he makes a good case for that towards the beginning of the book as well. So give that a read in these trying political times. John Brown, Abolitionist. I mean, you're a teacher or not. It's 500 pages long, but I couldn't put it down. My next history book I'm reading is American Uprising, the Untold Story of America's Largest Slave Revolt, Daniel Rasmussen. This happened on January 8th, which is my birthday. So I don't know why I looked that up, but it happened in New Orleans, I want to say 1811 or something like that. Well, no, that's during the war. Maybe the late 1700s. I haven't read it yet. I'll update you on that as well. All right. That's 20 minutes or 18. So we'll cut it there. I like to keep these short. I was going for 10 minutes for a long time, but I think if I keep going with the segments, that'll be good. You can get me at Professional Envelopment on Twitter. That's my name. And my handle is at Minton History, MINTON History. You can also see some of my kids' stuff that they're working on at www.mintonhistory.org. And I'm on Instagram, Minton History. That's that. Thanks for listening. I'll see you again soon.